All right, welcome to Unnamed Podcast from the Front Side, episode one.
Episode one.
Wow.
Yeah, let's do this. Like, right. I don't see why we shouldn't. I think the first thing that we ought to try to do is name it, though.
You think like, so? Yes, agile? That's a nice agile approach. You actually start podcasting before you actually name it.
Yeah, and also I like agile in that it is when it's used as like a metaphor for lazy. Like you know, you can drop in the word agile and replace it with the word lazy, and in those cases, I really like agile. Like, no, we use agile development. What that means is there's like a lot of work that we don't do. like, you know, there's all this like get requirements gathering and stuff like that. Like, why would we do that? We're agile. So you just make something and ship it and hope that people like it. And I feel like that's probably a good metaphor for this podcast.
Okay.
This is, I don't want to call it agile necessarily. We probably get sued by Alistair Coburn or somebody if we try to use the word agile.
Yeah, and probably labeled uncool.
Yeah. Yeah, kids aren't what comes after agile? What is life like in this post-agile world?
Lean?
Oh yeah, lean. That's pretty hot. This is a lean podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if we do that,
or we could just go out and say lazy.
Yeah.
Call lazy.
Yeah. Your other podcast is Drunk and Retired, which I feel like also implies the same style of like, you know, inebriated hammock usage that I would hope to go for in this.
All right.
So I don't know. Like, let's see.
Laziness, sloth.
really any of the seven sins I'd be good with. So yeah, I don't have a good answer for what we should name it. We could play on our name. We could like the company name is Frontside, so you could go like the Flipside Podcast.
The Flipside. I don't know. I try and keep my naming always pretty boring. I mean, we could call it the Frontside Podcast. I mean, I know that's boring, but like I try and only time I ever get creative with my names is like with Ruby Gems. But I try to be boring everywhere else, boring and predictable.
Well, I understand. Okay, so
just like the Google, it's Google friendly.
Let's take a little detour here and talk about naming for a second, because like I've actually noticed this too, where especially in programming, like I come from a writer's background, and like in writing, like naming stuff is the most fun part. Like, rattle some names off from like Game of Thrones.
From Game of Thrones?
Yeah, you said Brandon is a common name in Game of Thrones, but
there's
like
Brandon the Builder, Brandon the Unready, Brandon the Shipburner. There's lots of Brandons in the Game of Thrones.
So even like I'm just Brandon. Like I'm not Brandon the Burner. Was that
the Shipburner?
The Shipburner.
I think it had something to do. There's several instances of ship burning where. You know, it's kind of like where you know some lord will say, "No, god damn it, we're staying here," and they burn ships.
Actually, that's
like, you can't leave.
That's actually a good counterexample to my point, because these are extremely descriptive names. Like Brandon the Shipburner. If you have a program and you named your class like this is the Shipburner class, you know what that freaking class is doing. That class is going to burn a ship.
Exactly.
That's its job. So that's actually a good contra-example. Because I was thinking of like the Harry Potter books. You know, you have all these fanciful names drawn from either totally from a hat or from classic mythology.
Right. But usually they contain wisps of hints of foreshadowings of the character.
Like,
where they're kind of drawing together these different threads of meaning to try and kind of give a name. Like a good example is like her spells are like that. They're really they're kind of nonsense.
Yeah, but they're like a little Latin.
They're like onomatopoeia. They feel
Wingardium Leviosa. You're like, I don't know. That's probably going to levitate something.
Exactly.
But you can approach it diagonally. Right. And but when you're like in programming and you name stuff, you have to name it like the thing that it does. Like I've gotten really cute with this before. I named a class instead of it naming it like a relationship class. I named it like a BFF class.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like 2 months later where I was just ripping all of that stuff out, because it was like a nightmare every time I've tried to get cute or clever. And this is like a hallmark of like somebody that hasn't yet had the experience of having to maintain that yet.
Right.
Where you go in and you name something super clever, and you're like, "Oh, this is so clever and so cute," and the next person just wants to like show up at your house and stab you until you are not
they
alive.
They really have to get it.
Yes.
Your reference has to be really, really transparent.
And so it gets to the point where everything kind of looks and feels the same. But that's all right. Like, that's part of the point, is being able to kind of share things around and be able to and share a metaphor instead of, like, share how clever you are.
Right.
So that's the question here. Like, when we name this, are we going to share how clever we are, or are we going to share what this thing is and is about? So I guess...
And, you know, if we're really brilliant, we can wed those two.
Yeah. Man, it's going to be tough to top the idea of drunk and retired, because is that not the American dream? Like,
it's certainly, I don't know, it's certainly mine. Like, that's it. What, like, I've been shooting for the past 10 years.
That's the most aspirational name I've ever heard. that's it. Like, you could just literally write a book of that, and it sounds like the next Tim Ferriss book, basically.
I don't know who's Tim Ferriss.
Yeah, he's the 4-hour work week guy. So it's like 4-hour work week, 4-hour body, drunk and retired. That's the final book in the series.
So that wasn't said with any like hint of irony, the 4-hour work week. I know, because I hear
no the irony. The irony is all in subtext. Okay. The irony is all in the fact that he probably works 80-hour weeks. Like, okay. There's no way that he wrote that book in 4 hours a week and spent the rest of the time, I don't know, like, dancing on the beach or whatever was on the cover of that book. Like,
right.
drinking milk directly from coconuts. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't. I'm sure that that's really nice. So, name.
We'll think about it. We'll think about it. But
we'll have
episode two. We will have a name. Podcast. We'll announce it at the very beginning.
This is the unnamed Frontside podcast. So, well, welcome.
By the way, should we introduce ourselves?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, I guess I can start. My name is Charles, and that's who I am.
That's your life story. My name is Charles. That is, if you don't know me by now,
you will never know me.
So yes, I'm Brandon the Shipburner. Mm-hmm. I also, we work at the Frontside and we make web applications for people, that we think are pretty cool, using technologies that are pretty cool. And, sometimes we talk about it and we entertain ourselves and
we have a blast.
Yeah.
Have a really good time.
Yeah. So definitely. I want to start whispering actually now, like it's a NPR type deal. Mm-hmm. So there's something always so like solemn and so comforting and so, like you're speaking a lullaby to somebody. Like, everybody just like took notes from Garrison Keillor 25 years ago and said, mm-hmm. This is, if you are on NPR, this is how you talk. So that's what I want to follow, that trajectory. Yeah. So let's bring it down 2 notches. Pour yourself a glass of neat.
We sit in the middle of the room and people come in and work on code. It's flowing from the left and from the right, and sometimes it's up on the screen and sometimes it's coming through the speakers. But the code, that's my
impression. And the developers are always impression. Above average. Yeah, that guy is like a verbal glass of warm milk. So I could immediately like no matter what else is going on in my life.
Yeah. I feel like that's, speaking of him and changing gears like a little bit, it's like that's the point where I was like, oh my God, I'm in my 30s. Is like, I could listen to Prairie Home Companion and not be like wanting to claw my eyes out.
Please stop the bluegrass.
Yeah, exactly. Why? You're like, wow, how come I never listened to all this folk music that they're playing? I just thought it was like Garrison Keillor like droning on and kind of weird, like, skits about ketchup.
Yeah, it's kind of like the have you ever seen the Lawrence Welk show?
No.
So it was like from the 70s or whatever, and it was like kind of the Prairie Home Companion on mm-hmm. television, maybe, but it was like all these like family folk singers from around the country,
right.
The you know, the Drew sisters, and right. They would bring
it
them
just
in.
Makes you realize that there are people who go around and dedicate their life to this like folk music, and
yeah, and there's some point
there's
of like
this huge culture that just never sees, like never breaks the surface of our consciousness.
Yep. Yeah, you miss all that because you're so busy like looking for entertainment that some people that are doing quasi entertainment are kind of just expressing themselves in some way, and then some like weird like Norwegian guy or whatever he was like pulls them together and puts them on TV and dresses them like serial killers or whatever.
And
but
he's like, look at them, yeah, they're awesome.
Yeah, and just rotates them around, and there's no subtext to it. It's just like people getting up and doing their thing, and you get to a certain age where like you can appreciate that.
Yeah,
and then it's you're like,
wow, these people are really good.
Yeah, and you appreciate it suddenly. Like the switch from me was from the 20s to 30s was appreciating it unironically.
Right.
Like, oh, that's awesome. That's hilarious. And then it's like, yeah, it's actually, you know, all right, this is pretty good. Okay, I could do that. Like, ah, okay. Some switch has been flipped, and I'm, like, old now.
Yeah.
So, next is Matlock. Matlock. So, yeah, we'll figure a name out. It'll come together for us. Okay. Maybe we'll call it the Lawrence Welk Podcast. And we'll draw at least an audience of older
brought
folks.
Brought to you by the front side.
Brought to you by Geritol.
We need to. We'll see if we can get some performers.
Yeah.
Next time, maybe some bear jugglers. They're like I don't know, bear so, ball. I guess you can't. Like a juggling bear on a ball doesn't.
Maybe
really
they're
work
doing
well.
It now.
Did they? Was that true, or was it a guy in a bear suit? Did they actually train bears to roll around on beach balls?
I don't know. Like, I watch a lot of cartoons, and so all of my references to like, literally everything I know about popular culture is, like, through cartoons, primarily The Simpsons. So, like, you were talking about Scarface, like, mm-hmm. earlier. I've never seen Scarface, but I've seen The Simpsons.
Right.
I've never seen The Shining, but I've seen The Simpsons episode about it. So, right. like, I know all of popular culture, just
secondhand,
straight up,
right.
yeah, secondhand through Simpsons writers.
I mean, that is, until now, like, that is a trope that I've just accepted my entire life. Bears can be trained to balance on beach balls.
And they have to wear a tutu,
is
obviously.
Is it true? Like, that is actually amazing. That okay, seems
that's
like...
we'll have to, now you've actually...
Like, how many people have to be maimed for that to actually happen?
You're going to send me on a YouTube chat,
yeah,
like, looking for this.
Yeah.
One assumes...
Homework.
One assumes that there is enough vodka in Russia to have made that happen. Like, some attempt has been made at this in real life. All right, so name, we're going to tap the table yep. that discussion, because it's right. like, there's
got,
no way we're going
to
agree.
We're trying to keep it, you know, one of the goals here is to keep it concise and digestible.
So, but as far as like, a topic, I thought, like, the only thing I really had in mind that I thought that might be fun to talk about is something that I've, for some reason, it's come up a lot recently in working with people and talking with people, and I have been afflicted with this, and that is... One more feature-itis.
Man, that's a bad one.
It's pretty bad.
It can be terminal.
Yes. In fact, I would say, I don't know if it, like, I can't determine correlation
especially
or causation.
Yeah.
But yes, I can say that many of my projects are buried in my backyard with that written on as cause of death. Mm-hmm. Like, I am one more feature from shipping, having a shippable version of, like, 9 different things. Like, I could, if I just do the one more feature that people will actually
pay for
or do. So, I keep seeing this over and over again, and I don't see a lot of people talking about it. So, I wanted to see if you have, if you've ever run across that in places that you've worked, or if you've had a product like that. I can tell you about a couple examples from my history and
sure. I mean, I definitely, it's something that I have seen. I mean, I think it's a thing. I think it's a phenomenon. I think it's something that people need to be guarding against. I think, of course, I'm going to answer this from a developer's perspective, being a developer, but I think it's a lack of agility or lack of laziness on the business side of things, where you're waiting for some feature, and so you're stretching it out weeks, 2 weeks, whatever, and you're not going to get that feedback about what it is actually that your users want and what is actually going to bring you revenue. And so you need to always be in production, not just in development, but in the development of your business. So you need to always be in production about going out and actively trying to sell and market what you actually have today. Now, it might mean it's not the marketing story and the business story that you want to have. But the point is that should not prevent you from pushing what you have today in whatever form it is. So in that sense,
okay, so
like a continuous delivery of
these are two ideas
business or something like that. You see what I'm
saying? I see where you're going. So if I can restate, like, you're basically saying, like, people are, like, especially on the sales side, it's so tempting to sell the thing that you think someone might
yes.
want, that you step ahead of what you currently have, and you're,
right.
you constantly
you want to entice
set yourself,
you want, right.
Yeah, you set yourself at a deficit immediately. But that sits in sort of direct conflict to this, like, lean startup idea of selling people something that they want and then building it.
That's
so
true.
So these two things sit in conflict. Like, one of them is basically not is being able to live in the present and sell the thing that you currently have or the thing that you're doing, or deciding that somebody doesn't want the thing that you have. And so I think let me break that. Let me add that too,
because I mean, the thing that I've seen where it really like kills is because it keeps people from hustling. Like you need, I guess the thing is you got to be hustling. And part of hustle is going out and promising things that you don't currently have. Like you want to make sure that it's reasonable, but you're not. So I see what you're saying. It is like you do want to have some sort of lead time where you're saying, okay, we're going to do this. You want this thing? We'll get it for you. And then you go do it. That's definitely part of the hustle. But you don't want the lack of what you have to prevent you from hustling other ways.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like a good example would be like a Kickstarter. I've talked to maybe 4 or 5 people that have done a Kickstarter project or an Indiegogo project that they wound up having to come out of pocket for or just couldn't deliver. Like this is actually, I think you're going to start seeing some backlash soon about this because people, they're not talking to each other yet. And so most people just feel like they're a personal failure. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's this huge undercurrent of people that start one of these things and are undereducated about what it's going to take to deliver the thing that they're promising to do.
Right.
And so that's this, it's like a tightrope. And I get it. Like running a startup is really hard. So there are two parts of this. One is being intellectually honest with yourself about what you have, are capable of delivering, and can promise. And the other one is more that lean startup idea of being able to go find a group of people that are willing to pay for something and then delivering that. But what you wind up with most times, and I think this actually is true of most startup-y things or projects, that side projects people hack on, is they'll jump in and say, okay, I'm going to build this thing and I'm going to see who comes. And so they build something. They have an idea. Like, I want this thing. And if I make it for me, like rework style, like I built the thing to scratch my own itch, it automates the flow of, moving icons around on my desktop or whatever. Like it's something that matters a lot to me, but maybe who knows if anybody else is really interested in it. But you do this thing completely in isolation. You build it, and you get it most of the way there, and it's pretty much shippable. And what happens next is it gets zero traction. Like, no traction because nobody else is interested in shuffling icons around their desktop. And you go, okay, what is it about my icon shuffling idea that people haven't yet figured out? Like, are they idiots? Like, do they not get it? And I worked at a startup that was like 5 years of this, of shipping something that maybe a couple of people got the same way that we intended.
Right.
But it was like, most people didn't really have any interest in it. And so we spent millions of dollars building this idea out of like, oh, this is our idea. And so in that case, the one more feature thing, it's way too late for lean startup methodology.
Right.
Like if you sell features now ahead of this product, you're already so many millions of dollars behind it that there is no one more feature that's going to save it. But the way you use one more feature is an emotional buffer. Like, this thing is going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
It's done. You dropped $9 million into this product or whatever. You sunk all of this time. And the way that you intellectually and emotionally protect that and wrap around it is going, there's one more thing. If I just do one more thing for this product, then people will finally get what I was actually going for. But it's all like from myself out to, and then after a while, you just get desperate and you just start swinging at stuff. And, I have not seen that go really well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of good counterexamples to companies that have.
So what's the counter strategy for when you realize this happens? If you are intellectually honest with yourself, and you can say, you know what, I think I'm suffering from one more featureitis.
Like,
what's the remedy?
So that's a good question. Just throwing in the towel?
Right, cutting your losses and
honestly,
not throwing
like,
good money after bad.
There's
a whole thing on that is know when to murder your darlings.
Yeah.
Like, know when to, like, cut it off.
And you know, you're $9 million into something. That's a different conversation than you have a side project that's kind of languishing. And so whether you can kind of, like shove it into the it kind of shove it into the trash can and put it back, put the idea for it back into your ideas file, is different if it's a if it's an ongoing business and a going concern versus if it's just a side project idea you had and hacked together and nobody there was no uptake on it and nobody picked it up. I have to say that for me it would be just really take that the first thing would be to take that hard look and say if is this worth continuing on. And I would at that point maybe step back and reevaluate it and realize that you have been doing this fundamentally
wrong.
And so like it's like you've gotten to the point where you're at the end of a pier, and if you turn right, you're going to drop off into the ocean. If you turn left, you're going to drop off into the ocean. And if you go forward, you're going to drop into the ocean. What it's like saying, okay, what does a person do to extricate themselves? It's like, okay, throw that thing in reverse, yes, right. And back out. And go, okay, at what point did I go wrong on this? And trace it back to that point. And for most times it's...
And having the courage to be like, I might have to walk across this entire pier, walk back along this entire pier.
Yes. And take it back to the idea stage and say, okay, wait a minute. This idea was me making a bunch of assumptions about what people wanted. I am now going to have to go back. But what I will say is even though I have a lot of respect for people that do that, I met some people once that built their business on a PowerPoint presentation, took it on a tour around the country, and they've actually now built this into a very, like, an outrageously successful business. They wrote no code. They exercised all the discipline in the world. I'm not saying that that's necessarily like how everybody should do things. Like, go ahead and build that product. But when you get to the point where it's not getting all the traction that you want, maybe step back and detach your emotions from the product itself and come back to the idea of, wait a minute, I built this product as a straw man, like as this thing to validate whether this idea is any good or not. And so, like, take it back to the idea stage and go, okay, I have this product. And it's actually, I think, maybe easier for people to yell at an actual product and say, this doesn't do what I want at all. Usually they're too polite. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, oh, that's neat. What a cool idea. Yeah, that's great. Oh, I would totally sign up for your thing. And nobody uses it. Nobody likes it. And you'll get 100 people signing up on a waiting list or 200 people signing up on a waiting list to try it. And then maybe 50 people come in and actually use it once. And zero people ever come back. Like, how you are going to have to pick up the phone or an email client or something and talk to those people and find out, like, okay, what problem do you think this was solving for you? And does it remind you of a problem you actually have? Mm-hmm. But just understand that you built a product not to build a product to sell now. You have to step all the way back to, I built a product to extract answers from people about what they will actually pay for, what they would actually do. And I think if that's the part where you would apply like intellectual rigor and honesty, right, to that conversation.
Okay. So to conclude, I think we need to say, how do you diagnose when you actually might have one featureitis, and what are the remedies?
What would you say would be like red flags for having seen this in the past?
Well, red flags are when ship date is constantly slipping. Like, that's where you're like, oh, we can't ship it until it does this, and it needs to do this. And then you realize, oh, because I've done this, then it needs to do that. It's not complete. If there's never closure, even transient closure, I mean, obviously there's no point at which you've like, oh, I finished the program, we ran through the end zone, we spiked the ball, we're dancing around and like high-fiving the crowd. Of course, that's not going to happen. But if you're never actually delivering the thing that you want to deliver because it feels lacking in some way.
Yeah, imagine if you're like opening a fast food restaurant.
Like that to me, everything, a good, healthy, robust project is always lacking in some way.
Yes.
That's a sign of its health.
That's a really good point. And if it's not lacking in some way, you're probably even more delusional. Like, that's not a red flag. Yeah. That's not just like, and that's the weird thing is, I don't think people realize this so much, that if they're new to building products, is that every product that you use, especially in software, every product you use or have is lacking. It's deficient. Mm-hmm. The people who wrote it probably hate it by now because they know all the things it doesn't do. But yet, like I use this, I use Harvest, which is like a accounting, like billing, invoicing software for some stuff. And I bet that if I were to ask the Harvest engineers, I bet they hate that product. I bet they could tell me 100 things that are wrong with it. And if you listen to that inner voice nagging you, like you would never ship it. So that's, there's that normal fear of putting your work out right there for criticism and imperfect things. But you couple that also with the abject fear of complete failure, like that you could totally fall on your face.
Right.
And
the fear, and the thing that as you add features that adds to the incompleteness, like I can't ship it now that I've added feature A, I've got to have feature B or it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And there's a bug in feature B. So, right, so like I can't ship feature A because feature B has a bug in it right now.
Right.
I totally understand that.
Right. So those are the red flags I've seen.
Yeah,
I don't know about you.
Slipping dates is a good one. Watching the dates slip because you're not quite done yet is really, that's definitely a red flag. I would say maybe three times. Like watch for that third thing of I can't ship this because it doesn't have feature A. You're like, okay, well build feature A. If you say I can't build this because now with feature A and feature B, nobody's going to pay for it for feature B. What a lot of people will tell you is feature A, shut it off. Hang your shingle out, put a cash register out, and take people's money. And if they don't come, then you've got early enough feedback to start retooling right now. Mm-hmm. I would be a little more generous and say maybe give it three. But the third time you delay something, because it's not shippable, or the third time you make an excuse, you did hang a shingle out there and you are taking people's money and nobody's showing up, and the third time you're trying to add a feature to draw people in, I would really step back and reevaluate and sit down with your customers and find out, okay, what is it that you will pay for? And that's a hard conversation to have with people in general. It's right. Hard to get people to be honest about. It's hard to draw answers. I think that's a completely different conversation.
But the people who are, I don't know. I think if you talk to strangers and you talk to people who either are your customers, even people who aren't, like people who have been dissatisfied, usually people who have been dissatisfied are very... like are very forthcoming about why and ways, and sometimes those can be flipped into the most fiercely loyal customers if you address their specific concerns. They're extremely valuable.
So I totally agree.
So those are the diagnosis, and then the rest in terms of remedy.
It's basically to
obviously there's decapitation.
It's the most important thing is to stop moving. It's to stop moving forward. You think you're moving forward on something, but again, you're just moving closer to the edge of that pier because you no longer have any sense of direction as to where you are.
Right.
So stop, look around, and then retrace your steps back until you remember the last time you made a decision that was based on any actual data, any actual real feedback from people, and not just a single one-off feature request from somebody. Because there's a great tweet where somebody said that the way to build terrible software is one, build a one-off feature for a client to repeat, basically. So, I think that's really good advice. But it doesn't mean don't go get that feedback. It just means to aggregate that feedback. Mm. So, that's my like super professional programming and product building advice for the week. I feel like that was pretty good.
Yeah, I think that
was still no name, but that's gonna be fine.
That's okay.
Okay. Well, I hope Charles. I hope you get to have a wonderful week.
Yeah.
As well,
you too, Brandon. Right. Have a good weekend.
Okay.
Hi to the family for me.
Absolutely. You too. Okay.
Right.
See ya.